You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Jaguars. This is your man T-Wig, along with Philip Cruz. He's at Jacksonville on Twitter, and I am Shop Talking Wig on Twitter, and you can hit us up with your questions, and sometimes we'll actually get to them on this podcast where we talk about the Jaguars, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But I'd really be remiss if I did not mention the fact that today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. Woo, I like the way that that sounds. I'm going to get to the point with this real fast. With us, Miles Jack was at a fundraiser for Calais Campbell this past week and discussed the fact that he is the Mike. And for those that don't know what that means, is that means he is the middle linebacker. He is the quarterback on the defense. And he's not giving up on that fact that because of Telvin Smith's absence, a lot of folks, and the addition of Jake Ryan, a lot of folks believe that, okay, well, maybe this means that Miles will slide over to the position that a lot of people felt that he was best at or best suited for in the National Football League, and they just plug somebody else in to play middle linebacker. I feel Mr. Jack said, no, that's not necessarily true. I'm not going to move outside to the weak side position. I'm going to stay in the middle. I'm going to be the Mike, and I'm going to be the guy that's the quarterback of this defense. What do you think about how adamant he is about the fact that he wants to stay in the middle?
He would be silly not to say anything otherwise because he's in the final year of his deal, and that's clever posturing by his agent. Look, C.J. Mosley just got paid a king's ransom, you know, as the middle linebacker, and they'll get paid a little bit more than an outside linebacker. So him being in a contract year, that's really important for him to basically try to get every single penny he can. He should say he's the middle linebacker. That would be my advice if I was the agent. It's not a huge difference, but there is a difference, and he should get every dime he can. So, to be honest, it's also the position he's most comfortable with. He's wearing the green dot. He's doing all the signals. He's doing all the calls. And, you know, in terms of continuity, it would probably be best for the team in terms of continuity. But they have options. Like you said, they signed Jake Ryan. They signed Ramique Wilson, who has starting experience in the NFL. It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. And I think if – and I had this conversation, too, with my buddy Demetrius, who writes on our website and does a lot of the social media stuff. And he was trying to play the dominoes of the linebacker core and the depth chart based on what's going to happen if Miles does stay at Mike. Is that the best thing? I think the team would really like for Quincy Williams to just force them to play him because he's playing so well and turning heads in training camp and everything in OTAs. I think that would be the ideal situation because if he ends up actually being good, that's a guy on a bottom of the third round contract that they have cost control for the next 4 years, and Miles can stay at inside linebacker. And I think that's what they would like to see happen. And then you could have like someone like Najee Good play as the backup guy, the veteran guy behind him, and Miles Jack and Jake Ryan on the depth chart in the middle linebacker. But I honestly think that his best position is that weak side linebacker. I think playing him out in space and letting him cover and do some of those things and work out in space that he wasn't able to do with Telvin there, I think he would be unlocked a little bit, to be honest. What do you think, Wig?
What I believe is, because they spend so much time in nickel, well, you have two guys playing those positions. I really think that it's irrelevant whether he's playing Mike or Week in terms of the football part of it. I do know contractually and all of that, he wants to be considered a middle linebacker, and I would too, because when you look around with the way that so many teams play, that weak side linebacker sometimes is not necessarily consistently played the same way. With teams that really do decide that they're going to sit in that base 4-3, all the time, Seattle is one that comes to mind. That Mike linebacker and that weak side linebacker, that would be Bobby Wagner, KJ, right? That becomes a real, real, real important position. with teams that play a 3-4, the Mike linebacker is always on the field. Think about the kid from Georgia that went to Chicago. I mean, he's always on the field. Think about the way Denver's played the last few years with Brandon Marshall before he was let go this year. He was sort of a Mike Will type guy who's always on the field. I wouldn't want to go into a contract situation knowing that I'd be a guy who was known for first a Sam, then a Mike, and then a Will linebacker in a short four-year span. I do believe that. And this is something we touched on before. I think Miles Jack, for where he was drafted, you look at Jalen Smith in Dallas, who was also an injured guy who got drafted right around the same time that Miles got. They're talking about him being like a franchise-changing linebacker. You don't hear people saying that about Miles Jack around here. I do believe that for a guy who was considered a top six pick when he came out, who just slipped off because people were worried about his injury condition or his long-term medical condition, has he really, really outside of Jacksonville lived up to that billing? I'd say the answer is no. And maybe that's because this defense was full of so many superstars making so many plays. I just think it's kind of ironic and sad that a guy is really known for a play that was called as a bad call more than he's known for his stellar play on the field. When he came out, I was thinking Navarro Bowman. That's who I was thinking of when Miles Jack came out. I think moving him around so much has really kind of like changed that a little bit. I think the wasted year learning who Otto and Leo were on the family tree was a bad look on the part of Gus Bradley and that defensive staff. So I really do understand and think that he's the guy that says, no, look, this is where I am. I want to be a middle linebacker. I want to be the guy that makes the calls. I want to be a guy that's known for being consistent and making these plays. In terms of Quincy Williams, this is the thing that I keep telling people and folks don't realize. In Dave Caldwell's regime of running this organization, he's the highest drafted linebacker outside of guess who? Miles Jack. They haven't drafted another guy that high. And I know people say Josh Allen. Josh Allen is an edge rusher, in my opinion. And the more you see him backpedaling, the less effective he's going to be. He's brought here to put his hand in the ground and go rush the passer in some capacity in the future. So Quincy Williams, I think, is key. He's drafted. This isn't a Blair Brown pick where he's a fifth-round pick. This isn't Jacobs. It's not even Telvin Smith who got picked in the fifth round. And had he not failed the drug test, maybe he'd go in the late third or early fourth. But this is a guy that they think is going to play a lot of football for him. And I'd stick him at that Will linebacker position, and I'd leave Miles in the middle.
Yeah, we talked about surprises in our previous episode, right? Imagine somebody that could step up and be a surprise. And if he ends up laying people out like he did in any of his highlight tape at Murray State, then that's going to be a nice surprise. And as long as he's not missing tackles, as long as he's not missing assignments, that's good. And I know I was talking with someone, they were like, no, kind of the same thing you said, Wig. We don't want to move him again to a third spot. But middle linebacker and weak side linebacker, it's not like rocket science. It's not like learning a new playbook as a quarterback, right? And especially for someone like Miles Jack that already knows the playbook inside and out because he has to call the plays and did so last year and played one of the most snaps in the entire NFL 100% time on the field, he could go ahead and do that because he would know the assignments, he would know everything. It's not like a huge transition, like learning a whole new like position or something on the offensive side of the ball where you have to learn routes and stuff like that. It's basically just understanding your assignment. Okay, I gotta cover the tight end and man on this play. I gotta do a zone, you know, assignment this play. If he does this, I'll do this. Those types of things. So I don't think it would be like a huge, learning curve if he did move over. But I agree with you. Maybe leaving him inside linebacker, especially with Jake Ryan coming off the ACL and having to learn everything, that might be the best way to go. And to be honest, it's going to be probably the thing that I'm looking for the most when we start OTAs next week.
Yeah, it definitely will be something for us to check out. To see how much command, and the one thing that we haven't really discussed too is, Telvin was really vocal and was a real leader. Where do they get that from with him being gone? Miles is kind of a, you know, I'm not gonna say he's introverted. He's not. He has a great personality, but he's not that talky guy that number 50 was. So therefore, you're gonna look for guys to have that leadership and look for guys to have that sort of intensity. And I definitely think that moving forward, he's going to be able to do that Look, we're going to take a quick break. And coming up on the other side of this, we're going to talk about another key addition to this team. Boy, does Nick Foles, I think he might mean as much to this franchise as anyone that we can imagine in the last decade. He means more to their success or failure than anybody that we can imagine. But I also, we're going to talk about that, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. And this, boy, does this fall in line with me. Today's show is brought to you by Untuck It. That's right. All one word. That's Untuck It. Dads come in all shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts. Like tall, short, slim, relaxed. Have you ever wondered what your father's button-ups look like and why they're so long and baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off a casual untucked look that isn't sloppy. That's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is the solution that fits just right. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable to work in or for the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA to get 20% off. Boy, I think I need to log into that while we're on our break, and we'll talk about more Jaguar stuff on the other side of this break. All right, welcome back to LockedOnJaguars.com and Locked On Jaguars podcast with your boy Phillip Cruz and me, Tony Wiggins. And we're going to talk about a person that is vitally important to this franchise. And it is an understatement to say that Nick Foles is the key to this Jaguars season. Phil, I don't know if we could ever just point the finger at one guy like this and say that he's the key. I know we did it in the past with Blake Bortles, but it was all about whether or not he could do something. We've seen what Nick Foles is capable of and what he can do. The question is how will he do it here with this franchise in a new city with new weapons around him and a new coach? Even though he's familiar with John DeFilippo, it's still a situation where he's gone from Frank Reich as his offense coordinator. John Filippo was his quarterback's coach, but then he had to deal with Doug Peterson straight up. And now it's just John DeFilippo and Doug Marrone. How much of those differences do you think will play into how successful he is? And then what about the pressure here along with the schedule that the Jaguars have to play?
So I want to read something. And this is actually what he said during his address. He said, "You want to have a lesson in impressive workplace leadership? I'll share just one football anecdote. Last year when our great backup quarterback Nick Foles went into the huddle with 2 minutes left in the game to start a drive that we needed to win the Super Bowl, you know what he said? Not let's go do this, but simply, I love you guys. I love you. Maybe it sounds hokey, but that could be more freeing of the best of you that you have inside than knowing you're loved regardless of what happens." So I thought that was kind of cool. That was interesting, a little anecdote about Nick Foles. I think the biggest thing that he brings to this team, he's a symbol of belief. And we've talked about it before. It seems like Blake just ended up kind of being a mental anchor on everybody else and bringing everyone down. And, you know, the defense knowing that they could do absolutely everything and get the ball back and execute and everything. But as they put the ball back in Five's hands, it's just all for naught. So if anything, Nick Foles' presence here in Jacksonville turns a whole new page, and it might be the most important person or player or addition that this franchise has seen in a very, very long time. So it's going to be fun to watch. And in my opinion, he needs to get a good start out of the gate. Because if we go to week 4 or week 5 and he's throwing a mess of interceptions and he's doing a lot of the stuff that Blake was doing, you know, in terms of decision making, even if he's throwing a prettier ball, it's not going to matter, right? So he needs to be able to get out of the gate with a hot start. And he has the advantage of a new team, a new system and everything. There's not a lot of tape out there on how they're going to implement his approach to the game, even though he worked with John DeFilippo in the past. So he needs to come out of the gate hot, and he needs to take control of the offense. And that's another thing we're going to look for here when camp opens up.
Right. And here's the thing about that. He didn't start off very hot last year with the Eagles when I was watching them at the beginning of the season. And folks were saying, well, this ain't it. You know, won that Super Bowl, but it was It was an anomaly. It's just what it was. The guy just happened to get hot at the right time. Yada, 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 yada. The other guy comes back. He's playing well. Then he gets hurt again. Foles has to come back, and he finishes off, and they go back to the playoffs and probably should have been in the NFC Championship game if it weren't for a drop pass. So, I mean, yeah, all of that matters. Hey, look, as far as him saying, telling people that he loved them, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And, you know, I guess normally I do fall for that stuff, but I'm not in a sappy mood today for some reason. But, you know, it's easy to tell your family at night you love them when there's food on the table and the lights are on. You tell them you love them when they're hungry and the lights are off. It's like, yeah, you love me, but you better go find a way to get somebody in here to cut these lights on and get me something to eat. And you can tell I watched a lot of Good Times when I was a little kid, Phil. But the thing is I love you will only work after you're a Super Bowl champion, after you're a guy who they've already depended on before, and, you know, they know your track record. It doesn't work coming into the season. It doesn't work walking in right away. So, you know, I think I like Nick Foles. I really do. I remember when he threw for 27 touchdowns and 2 picks in Philly, and that wasn't good enough for Chip Kelly. Talk about how one person can really affect your career arc. There it is right there. You go for 27 and 2. The coach basically tells you you're not good enough, and then you have to go to another team as a backup. And then somehow you end up with Jeff Fisher, who I believe is a quarterback killer, in St. Louis. Or LA, I think it was St. Louis at the time. But still, it's like he's a lesson in perseverance. He's a lesson in the underdog getting a shot. All that's well and good. Even the Super Bowl win, I believe he was playing with house money, and I don't want to sit here and make it sound like that's an easy thing to do. It's not, especially playing in a media market like Philadelphia. It is not easy to have that type of pressure on your back. But I will say this, expectations are now different. He has a bunch of money in his pocket, and I'm not that guy that says, okay, after a guy gets paid, he all of a sudden tapers off. I'll never be that guy because I'm not a psychoanalyst. I can't tell whether that really happens or not, or if it's coincidental. And we've seen that now happen here with X player who we said we're not going to talk about until there's news. But a lot of people making that assertion and that assumption, and I don't think it's fair. But I do think it is fair to look at the fact that he's now playing from ahead of the game, as opposed, he's not the underdog anymore. He's not behind anything. He's not trying to prove anything. Now these expectations are on his back and on his shoulders, and he has his own team for what I believe is the first time ever. He has his own team, and there are people around here where he has to be. Nick Foles now has to be the best player on the football field for the Jacksonville Jaguars in order for them to be successful, and I don't think at any time in Philadelphia that's what it was. So we'll see how he works when we go out to OTAs. We'll see how he looks. We'll see how he commands. But while they're in shorts or while they're in shells or while they're playing at home against their own guys, it still won't matter until the bullets start flying for real, and that is when the regular season starts. And they have a very, very tough schedule, and that schedule isn't going to give them any breaks. So even when you look at the division games, which what we'll do is on the other side, we'll talk about this. We'll talk about the fact that everyone has gotten better. The Jaguars have improved, but in your mind, if you think that you're going to take all of your improvements and all of your additions and all of your guys you're coming back off of injury, you're going to take that and say, okay, we'll just go play now. Well, you're not playing last year's opponents. You're not playing. Those teams didn't stand pat. Those teams didn't sit still. They got guys back from injury. Those teams made new additions. Those teams also made some additions in the offseason in terms of free agency. So we'll talk about that on the other side of LockedOnJaguars.com. All right, welcome back to LockedOnJaguars.com with Philip Cruz and Tony Wiggins. And today's show is brought to you by Grip 6, where their goal is to literally make the best belt that's ever been made. Grip 6 is easy. It's an easy, thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas. and even moms and wives. See our women's collection. That's right. They have belts for moms and wives. The Father's Day is on the way. It is an ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap, and it carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat against the waist, making the belt super comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt, no holes, no flap, no bulk. Grip 6 has a special offer for you at grip6.com/lock. Lock with an E, L-O-C-K-E. That's right, grip6.com/lock with an E. That is your promo code for a special offer at Grip 6 Belts. You know what? This entire show, man, we're talking about these sponsors, and it's all aimed at fat guys like me. That's why I'm sitting there tripping. You got no tuck shirts. You got hotel.com, you know, when you want to lay in a bed all day long when you go on a trip. Like, Phil, you know, I was sleeping earlier today with this bad back. And I got a belt. You got a belt, man, with where that big old buckle isn't sticking out, showing exactly where your belly ends and the back of that shirt begins. I love it, man. I'm telling you. You don't have these problems, Phil. I seen you, man. Your little taco-eating self down there. You're having a good time. You're all slim and walking around without these problems. I'm walking around with these fat boy issues, man.
It's a matter of time. It's going to come one day. So I'm just going to try to learn from you now and go into full dad mode whenever that time comes, probably in the near future. But it certainly seems like they're targeting that Father's Day window coming up, doesn't it?
And ain't nothing wrong with it, man. Happy early Father's Day to all you guys. It's one of the things I'm more proud of. I got 5 kids and 6 when you include my dog, man. Did you see? I don't know if you, I posted online. Did you see me and my dog struggling?
I did not, no.
Yeah. My dog, we moved from the Bartram area of Jacksonville to downtown. It's not the urban stuff that's bothering her. What's bothering her is that she loved, my dog's 9 years old, she loved our townhouse in Bartram. I mean, it was like she knew every crevice of that place. So now she's in this new place and she's getting used to it. She doesn't necessarily like it. But man, she was giving me a hard time. But speaking of comfort zones in terms of your division, the Jacksonville Jaguars are obviously in the AFC South. A year or two ago, the AFC South, I used to jokingly, when I was on terrestrial everyday radio, refer to the AFC South as the Mountain West of the NFL, because it's like no one respected the AFC South with the exception of the Houston Texans, and they didn't have Deshaun Watson at the time. They had a great defense. They were very similar to Jacksonville. They had a great defense and then a quarterback nobody knew and nobody respected. And a porous offensive line. So it was only a matter of time. If you scored 23 points, you were going to beat Houston. Nobody respected them. The Jaguars were, quite frankly, one of the laughing stocks of the league, along with the Indianapolis Colts, because Andrew Luck was injured, Phil. And if you go back, no one really knew what to think of Tennessee. The only team in the league that had problems with Tennessee was Jacksonville. So that's changed. That has changed mightily now. A trip through the AFC South is not a picnic. A trip through the AFC South is a headache waiting to happen in terms of the physicality that is played in this division, along with the fact that these teams have sort of played with a chip on their shoulder, and now they have an identity. Andrew Luck is back in Indianapolis. They keep making these additions, even if the, like Darius Leonard, they make additions that you haven't really heard of, but they're improving the infrastructure of their team. They may have the best guard in the league playing on their team right now. He's pancaking people every week. They're getting plays made by folks that you wouldn't imagine, and quietly they're building a young secondary that's very impressive. You look at Houston, Deshaun Watson, a fabulous playmaker. They continue to add weapons around him. The only thing you wonder is if they're ever going to improve that offensive line, and they made some strides to do that this year in the offseason in the draft, albeit get some young guys who have not played the greatest competition. And then, of course, Tennessee, which is that big. I call Tennessee the ingrown toenail for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But it's just like aggravating. It won't go away. You look down, you see it, and it's always there. They're the ingrown toenail for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've even improved a little bit. They had added some depth on the defense and with the wide receiver position. They got another backup quarterback this year. So what do you think? You know, there's one thing to be enthusiastic, but there's another thing to look at the schedule, especially in the division, because that's where it starts, Phil, and understand that, look, other teams got better too. They didn't just stand pat. How do you look at that if you're a Jaguars fan? Do you let your enthusiasm, because the season's going to start, just make you naive to the fact that those teams are still going to be very, very difficult outs for this football team?
Yeah, so, like, the Texans attempted to shore up what was their biggest weakness in, you know, the left tackle, right tackle spots. In the draft, they took Titus Howard from Alabama State, Max Sharping from Northern Illinois. And to be honest with you, I don't think that in my evaluation of the players, I think they reached for Howard. And I don't think that they improved it all that much. They took a developmental tight end that I liked in Cahale Warning, but he is very much a developmental tight end. Outside of that, they didn't do much in free agency. I know they added Tashaun Gibson in the safety spot next to Justin Reed, who I think is going to have a huge next season, second season in the league here. So that could be a interesting safety pairing. They got Bradley Roby in free agency. And, of course, like you said, Deshaun Watson is going to be back, and it's going to be another year in that system and learning everything. So while I don't think that they did a great job addressing their weaknesses, especially on the individual matchup with this Jaguars team when it comes to our pass rushers, they're still a dangerous team. They're going to be tough to challenge. Indianapolis is really the cream of the crop. Apparently Paris Campbell, their rookie slot receiver that they drafted out of Ohio State, is looking really good. I know, like you said, they're playing in pajamas right now, but it's better to look good than to look bad, that's for sure. And they added a partner in crime in Kari Willis next to Malik Hooker in the secondary. They finally got a cornerback that they feel really good about in Rock Ya-Sin, who played at Temple, and kind of could be like their Darius Leonard of the secondary this year. And of course, they added Justin Houston in free agency as well. So that team, the Colts, only got better, in my opinion, I think. And all their young rookies last year are going to be going into their second season. So you should see a big improvement and a big jump up from the Colts. And they're going to be really tough to tackle. And then the ingrown toenails, the Tennessee ingrown toenails, added A.J. Brown with the wide receiver spot. They addressed the huge hole at that guard from Charlotte in Nate Davis. They got a safety defensive back in Imani Hooker. And Cam Wake in free agency, older guy, but man, if they need just a one-year surge here and teach, you know, young Harold Landry how to rush and do some of those things, that addition could pay for itself. And added Roger Saffold on the offensive line as well. So, like you said, these teams really got better. They really did. So it's important for Jags fans to temper their expectations and not get too ahead of themselves or too excited. I know the Jags did stuff too. They had a fairly good offseason. But for the Jags, it's really kind of come down to an unheralded group, and I think that's really the offensive line. I think they really didn't play much last year. So everybody come back. If they could stay healthy, it's going to be a different story.
That's the key. You just mentioned it, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, because I know when we do a show tomorrow, we're going to discuss the others of this football team, and that's one of them. But you made a great, great valid point about this offensive line. Those guys have not really, really played well. In terms of something that you mentioned with the Colts and their receiving core, it doesn't seem like that long ago we were saying, okay, they got T.Y. Hilton and who else? Well, guess what? You're right about Paris Campbell. The other thing that you're right about is this, or the other thing maybe you didn't mention, is remember last year during training camp in the preseason, there's a kid named Deion Cain, I believe his name, out of Clemson, was absolutely ripping the Colts training camp apart. Well, he missed all season with injury, and he's coming back, and he's had an entire year. He didn't get hurt in the middle of the season with it. He had an entire year to get healthy.
And Devin Funchess now.
Yeah, so I mean that's a whole different ball game up there in terms of weaponry with the Indianapolis Colts, and I believe they may be the scariest team in the NFL. I actually have a guy that I call family. You know, he's not family. He's a very good friend of my kids. He calls me Unc, and he's in camp with the Colts. He was there last year. He told me that Malik Hooker is the best football player that he's ever seen. That's what he told me. Malik Hooker, he says, I've never seen anything like, it's like he's a machine. And that's coming off of it. That's a guy who basically shredded his knee And on tape, I'm going to tell you, on tape, I always said that Sean Taylor's the best safety I've ever seen, but Sean Taylor's different. Sean Taylor's like a dinosaur playing. Say he's 6'3", 230 pounds. Malik Hooker reminds me more of Ed Reed than anybody I've ever seen in my life. So it's going to be, you know, interesting to watch how these things develop with the Jacksonville Jaguars and their opponents for this season. OTA start this week. Your boy will be on the practice field, fresh eyes, giving you live updates. Well, it's not live updates. I'll be recording live updates, and then I'll be telling you here on LockedOnJaguars.com and Locked On Jaguars what I saw out at training camp for Philip Cruz. This is T-Wig. We're going to pause for the calls, and we're going to give you a break and come back with some more Locked On Jaguars tomorrow with another edition of LockedOnJaguars.com. Take care.